A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Welcome to my weird prompts. So Daniel sent us this one, and it's the most meta prompt we've ever received. He's essentially asking us to analyze the experiment that creates us. The core question, what do you call it when you take an AI-generated podcast and scale it to thousands of episodes, funding it yourself as a public good, long past the point where any normal proof of concept would have stopped? And if someone wanted to present what they learned, whether for academic publication or commercialization, what's the actual value of having run at scale versus just doing 10 episodes and calling it done?
This is the kind of prompt that makes me wish I still had a whiteboard in my clinic office. Because the question isn't really about podcasting, is it? It's about what scale reveals that small pilots hide. And the answer turns out to be almost everything.
Most AI experiments I see stop at 10 episodes. Maybe 20 if someone's really committed. They prove the thing can work, get a few impressive demos, and move on. Pushing to 1,000 is almost a different species of activity.
Right, and that's exactly where the interesting stuff lives. When you run a 10-episode pilot, you learn whether the pipeline functions at all. Can it generate coherent audio? Does the retrieval work? Are the voices tolerable? Those are yes or no questions, and you get your answers fast. But the prompt is describing something fundamentally different, a multi-year habit, where the system had to prove itself not just once, but every single day, across thousands of topics, under real constraints of time, money, and attention.
The phrase that's going to sit with me is scaled-up proof of concept. It sounds like a contradiction. A proof of concept is supposed to be small, by definition. You prove the concept, then you either build it for real or you don't. But what if the concept you're trying to prove can't be demonstrated at small scale? What if the thing you're testing is whether it becomes a habit, whether the economics hold over time, whether content decays or improves?
That's the crux. The prompt lists three motivations for scaling up, and each one only becomes testable after you've pushed well past the pilot phase. The first is graph-based exploration of interconnected themes. Episodes become nodes in a knowledge graph, and the value of that graph grows non-linearly with the number of episodes. 10 episodes give you a few connections. 1,000 episodes give you a fabric.
The second motivation is the evergreen listening library, which is a bet on longevity that you can't validate in a month. You need to see whether episodes from 6 months ago still hold up, whether the generation quality was consistent enough that the back catalog is actually worth revisiting.
The third is the one I find most interesting, that there's something fundamentally different about testing at scale. The prompt mentions cost-effectiveness, habit formation, displacement of other media consumption. None of those metrics even exist in a 10-episode pilot. You can't measure whether something replaced your podcast habit if you only made it for 2 weeks.
It's like trying to test whether a diet works by doing it for a single day. You might learn whether the food is edible. You won't learn whether you'll stick with it, whether it's affordable over time, or whether your health actually improves. The thing you care about is inherently longitudinal.
There's a parallel here to how venture-backed startups approach product validation. A traditional pilot is like a 100-user beta. You get qualitative feedback, you fix the obvious bugs, you see if anyone likes it. But the failure modes of a 100-user product are completely different from the failure modes of a 10,000-user product. At 100 users, your database probably hasn't fallen over. Your API costs haven't become a line item that keeps you up at night. Your content moderation problems are manageable with manual review. At 10,000 users, all of those things break in ways you couldn't have predicted.
This experiment ran at the equivalent of 10,000 users, but in the time dimension rather than the user count dimension. Thousands of episodes sustained over years. The pipeline had to survive real-world drift, model updates, API changes, shifting content needs.
The prompt mentions tinkering with the generation pipeline periodically while sending in questions daily. That rhythm is itself a finding. It suggests the system doesn't need to be fully autonomous to be viable. it needs to be maintainable with periodic intervention. That's a much more realistic bar than full autonomy, and it's one you'd never discover if you just ran it for a week and declared victory.
I also want to flag something that's easy to miss. The prompt says the creator's wife and friends became compulsive listeners. That's not just a nice anecdote. It's a social validation signal that cuts through the creator's own bias. When you build something yourself, you're the worst judge of whether it's any good. But when people who have no stake in the project, who will tell you honestly if it's boring or broken, start listening compulsively, that's real signal.
It's the equivalent of a blind taste test. The creator knows how the sausage is made. The wife just knows whether she wants to listen to the next episode. And apparently she did, consistently, across thousands of them. That's a retention metric that any media company would kill for.
We've got this strange beast. Non-revenue. Personally funded, operating as a public good. But at the same time, it's generated cost data, engagement patterns, pipeline reliability metrics, and content longevity data that would be directly transferable to a commercial offering. It's an experiment that looks like a hobby, but produces the kind of operational knowledge that companies spend millions trying to get.
That's the tension the prompt is really poking at. How do you name this thing? How do you present it? If someone walked into a pitch meeting and said, I've run a 1,000-episode AI podcast experiment at my own expense for years, is that a weird hobby? Or is it the most rigorous validation you could possibly bring?
I think the answer depends entirely on how you frame it. But before we get to framing, we should probably define what we're even looking at. Because scaled-up proof of concept is a phrase that does real work, but it's also fighting against the standard vocabulary. Most people hear proof of concept and think small, disposable, not meant to last. Adding scaled up in front of it almost reads as a provocation.
It is a provocation. It's saying the conventional wisdom about how you validate ideas is wrong, or at least incomplete, for a whole class of AI-mediated experiences. If what you're testing is whether something can become a daily habit, you can't shortcut the daily part. If what you're testing is whether the economics work at volume, you can't shortcut the volume. The scale isn't a nice to have, it's the thing being tested.
The prompt is asking us to do two things. First, help name and taxonomize this approach. Second, provide a framework for presenting the learnings to different audiences, academic, commercial, open source. And underneath both of those is a more personal question. Was this worth doing? And what did it actually prove?
Which means we should probably start by understanding what was actually built. The operational mechanics, the costs, the failure modes. Because you can't present learnings you haven't articulated.
We can't articulate them without getting into the specifics of what running at this scale actually looks like day to day. The prompt gives us the outline. Daily question submission, periodic pipeline tinkering, commute listening. But I want to understand the economics and the architecture before we start building a taxonomy.
Then let's do that. Let's start with what this pipeline actually is, what it costs to run, and what broke along the way. Because the breaks are where the real learning lives. That brings us to the core question. Can agentic AI produce a daily, listenable, informative podcast at scale? Not 10 times as a demo. But day after day, across thousands of topics, with enough consistency that people build it into their routines.
The prompt frames this as an experiment, which is the right word. The podcast is both the product and the testbed. You're listening to the output while simultaneously generating data about whether the output is any good.
That dual role matters. In a standard pilot, the thing you're building and the thing you're measuring are separate. Here, the act of consumption is the measurement, and it's been running long enough that the measurement itself has become a dataset.
This is what separates it from something like Notebook LM's audio overviews. Those were released back in September of 2024, and they're genuinely impressive. For a lot of people, their first taste of what AI-generated podcasting could sound like.
That's exactly the ceiling most people hit. They generate a few episodes, they're delighted, they show their friends, and then they stop. The pipeline works. Proof of concept achieved. But what they haven't tested is whether that pipeline survives 1,000 iterations, whether the content stays fresh, whether the cost makes sense at volume, whether anyone would still be listening 6 months later.
Notebook LM gives you a snapshot. It proves the thing is possible. What this experiment tested is whether it's sustainable. Those are different questions.
If you've done 10 episodes, you can say, the technology exists to generate conversational audio from source material, which everyone already knows. If you've done 1,000 episodes, you can say, here's what it actually costs per episode at scale. Here's the failure rate. Here's how often I had to intervene. Here's how the content aged. And here's whether real people kept listening. That second set of claims is commercially legible in a way the first set isn't.
The prompt also mentions something that gets overlooked in a lot of AI discourse. This was funded entirely from personal finances, as a public good. No grants, no VC, no monetization strategy. That's not just a biographical detail. It means the cost data is real. There's no subsidy distorting the economics.
If a company runs an experiment and says each episode costs $2, you have to ask whether they're counting engineer salaries, office space, infrastructure overhead. When an individual funds it from their own pocket, the cost is the cost. API calls plus compute plus whatever tools they're using. That number is clean.
Clean numbers are what you need if you're ever going to present this to someone who might fund or buy it. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Before we talk about presenting the learnings, we should understand what was actually learned operationally.
The prompt gives us the shape of it. Daily question submission. That's the input rhythm. The agentic system retrieves context, generates a script, produces audio. Periodic tinkering with the pipeline, but not daily maintenance. And consumption happens during a commute, which means the listening habit is tied to an existing routine.
That last part is underrated. The commute is already a fixed point in the day. The podcast didn't have to create a new slot in the creator's schedule. It just had to displace whatever was already filling that slot. That's a much easier behavioral change to sustain than find a new 30-minute window somewhere.
That's exactly the kind of insight you only get at scale. In a 2-week pilot, you might listen during your commute and think, "This is nice." After 6 months, you notice you've stopped listening to something else. After a year, you realize the AI podcast has become your default, and the other shows you used to follow have quietly fallen out of rotation. That's habit displacement data, and it's valuable for anyone trying to understand how AI-generated content fits into real media diets.
It's also worth noting what this experiment didn't require. The prompt says it doesn't displace much work time. The pipeline runs with periodic tinkering, not constant handholding. If it demanded 8 hours of curation per episode, the whole thing would have collapsed after week 3. The fact that it's still running is itself evidence that the maintenance burden is sustainable.
Which brings us back to the central tension of the prompt. This is undeniably a proof of concept. It's non-revenue, it's personally funded, it's an experiment. But it's a proof of concept that has produced operational data you normally only get from a production system. So what do you call it? The standard vocabulary doesn't have a good slot for pilot that ran long enough to become a longitudinal study.
I think that's exactly the taxonomy problem the prompt wants us to solve. But before we build a naming scheme, we should walk through the actual mechanics. What's happening under the hood when this thing generates an episode? And what does it cost to keep it running?
Let's do that. Because the economics are where the commercial story either lives or dies. The three motivations the prompt lays out are worth taking one at a time, because each one only really activates at scale. First, graph-based exploration. If you've got 10 episodes, you can draw maybe 3 lines between them. At 1,000 episodes, you've got a genuine knowledge graph. Themes recur, topics connect in ways the creator didn't plan, and the archive becomes navigable by concept rather than by chronology.
Which is a fundamentally different product. A 10-episode miniseries you listen to in order. A 1,000-episode graph you browse. The listener experience shifts from linear to spatial.
That shift only becomes visible once the density of connections crosses some threshold. You can't graph explore a dozen nodes. You need hundreds before the structure emerges.
Second motivation, the evergreen listening library. The prompt says the creator hopes to listen to these episodes into the future. That's a bet on content longevity, and it's a bet you can only validate by actually waiting. Content decay is one of those things nobody measures in a pilot. You generate 10 episodes, they sound great, you move on. But does episode 47 still hold up 6 months later? Does episode 200 reference something that's now outdated in a way that breaks the listening experience? Those questions only appear over time.
The third motivation is the one that does the heaviest lifting, testing at scale versus proof of concept, and the prompt is explicit about what scale revealed that a small test couldn't. Cost effectiveness at volume. Whether the podcast can embed itself into daily life. Whether it displaces other media consumption patterns.
Let's get concrete on the pipeline, because the economics flow from the architecture. The workflow, as I understand it, is the creator sends in questions daily. An agentic system retrieves relevant context, web research, past episode data, whatever grounding material is needed, then generates a script, then produces audio. The creator tinkers with the generation pipeline periodically, maybe monthly, but doesn't touch it day to day.
That periodic tinkering is a key detail. It means the system runs largely unattended. If it needed daily debugging, the whole thing would have collapsed under its own maintenance burden sometime around episode 50. In a 10-episode test, you're paying attention. You catch every glitch. You're actively shepherding the thing. You don't learn whether the pipeline can survive benign neglect, which is what a production system actually needs to do.
Let's talk costs. The prompt describes this as personally funded, no revenue. What does it actually cost to run something like this at thousands of episodes?
We don't have the creator's exact API bills, but we can estimate. A single episode probably involves multiple LLM calls, one for research retrieval, one for script generation, potentially a separate step for fact-checking or refinement, plus text-to-speech generation for two voices across 20 to 30 minutes of audio. If you're using frontier models, you're probably looking at somewhere between 50 cents and $2 per episode in raw compute and API costs.
Call it a dollar an episode on average. At 1,000 episodes, that's $1,000. At 2,000, 2,000. Over multiple years, we're talking a few thousand dollars total. That's real money for an individual, but it's rounding error for a media company.
That's the commercial story in one number. Traditional podcast production. You're paying a host, an editor, maybe a producer. A professionally produced daily podcast might cost hundreds of dollars per episode easily. This pipeline produces an episode for the price of a coffee.
The cost comparison isn't quite fair, because the AI podcast doesn't have a host who can go on a press tour or build a personal brand. The fair comparison is, what would it cost to produce this volume of audio content through any other means?
The answer is, you wouldn't. Nobody commissions a 1,000-episode podcast series as an experiment. The economics of traditional production make that absurd, which is precisely why scale itself is the innovation here. The AI pipeline makes volume cheap enough that you can afford to learn things no traditional producer would ever learn, because no traditional producer would ever run the experiment.
The daily habit test is the clearest example. You can't study habit formation around a podcast in a 2-week trial. You need months of data. You need to see whether the listener starts reaching for it automatically, whether it survives vacations and schedule changes, whether it outcompetes other shows in the same time slot.
The prompt gives us that data point directly. The podcast displaced other media consumption. That's a substitution effect, and it's the gold standard for habit formation. You're not adding listening time, you're capturing existing listening time from something else.
Think about what a startup would pay to know that. If you're building a media product, the question isn't, do people like it? It's, does it actually change behavior? Liking something is cheap. Rearranging your daily routine around it is expensive, behaviorally speaking.
This is also where the 1,000-episode scale produces something a 100-episode scale doesn't. At 100 episodes, you might still be in the novelty phase. Listeners might be tuning in because it's new and interesting. At 1,000 episodes, novelty is long gone. If people are still listening, it's because the content is actually serving a need.
The startup analogy the prompt invites is useful here. 100 user beta tells you whether the app crashes. A 10,000 user beta tells you whether the servers melt, whether the support queue becomes unmanageable, whether user behavior at scale looks nothing like user behavior in a curated test group.
Different failure modes emerge. At small scale, you're debugging the core loop. At large scale, you're debugging the edges, the weird inputs, the resource contention, the slow degradations that only become visible in aggregate.
For this podcast, the equivalent would be, does the quality drift over time in ways the creator doesn't notice because they're too close to it? Do certain topic clusters get overrepresented because the retrieval system has a bias? Does the tone ossify into a house style that becomes predictable?
Those are exactly the questions a 10-episode pilot can't even ask. And they're the ones that matter if you're thinking about commercializing this. So let's name it. The prompt asks what to call this thing, and the standard vocabulary doesn't have a slot for it. A proof of concept typically means build the smallest thing that demonstrates feasibility and then stop. A pilot means run it with real users for a limited time, then decide whether to invest. A production system means this is live, it's serving users, it's making money, or it's trying to.
This is none of those. It's been running for years, so it's not a pilot. It doesn't generate revenue, so it's not production. And it produced thousands of episodes, so calling it a proof of concept feels almost deliberately misleading.
I'd propose a three-part taxonomy. First, there's the classic proof of concept. 10 episodes. Answer the binary question. Does this work at all? Second, there's what a startup would call a production pilot, maybe 50 to 100 episodes, testing whether the pipeline holds up under light sustained load. And then there's what this project actually is, a scaled longitudinal experiment. The key word is longitudinal. It's designed to reveal changes over time, not just snapshots.
Longitudinal experiment is accurate, but it sounds like a medical trial. If you're presenting this to a commercial audience, you need something sharper. Scaled proof of concept actually does good work because it contains the productive contradiction. It signals that you prove something that couldn't be proven small.
For an academic audience, I'd lean into longitudinal case study in AI-mediated content generation. That's the language that gets past a journal editor. You're making a methodological claim, the phenomenon under study. Habit formation, content decay, pipeline drift only becomes observable at scale and over time. A short-duration study simply couldn't address the research question.
For the open-source community, you don't need a fancy name at all. You share the architecture. You share the failure modes. You share the cost data. The name is less important than the transparency. Here's what broke and when is worth more than any taxonomy.
Which brings us to the practical question, how do you actually present this experience to different audiences? Let's say someone running this project wants to give a talk, write a paper, or pitch a commercial offering. What goes in each deck?
For an academic case study, the contribution is methodological. You're arguing that AI content generation research has been systematically underestimating long-term dynamics because nobody runs experiments long enough. The paper writes itself: introduction, pipeline architecture, quantitative results, cost per episode over time, content decay rates, habit formation metrics, then discussion of what these findings imply for the field.
The habit formation data is the crown jewel for an academic audience. You've got something close to a natural experiment, a listener who submitted questions daily and consumed episodes during a fixed routine over a period of years. You can document substitution effects, which prior media habits were displaced, and in what order. That's behavioral data that lab studies can't produce.
For a commercial pitch deck, you lead with two things: cost per episode and engagement duration. We can produce a daily, listenable, factually grounded podcast for under $2 an episode, and our data shows listeners remain engaged for hundreds of episodes, not dozens. That's the slide that makes a brand or a media company lean forward.
The white label case is the most straightforward. A company that wants a daily podcast, a trade association, a professional services firm, a niche media brand currently has two options: hire a host and production team, which costs hundreds per episode, or don't have a podcast. This pipeline offers a third option that didn't exist before. The pitch is, you provide the topic domain and some seed content, we provide a daily show that sounds professional and stays on brand.
The premium tier model is trickier, but potentially more interesting. Instead of white labeling for one client, you run a public podcast with a free tier, the daily episode on whatever topics the system surfaces, and a paid tier where subscribers can submit their own questions and get episodes generated on their topics. The free tier builds audience. The paid tier generates revenue.
The API access play is the most scalable, but requires the most technical sophistication from customers. You're essentially saying, here's the pipeline, you hook into it, you configure the voices and the topic domains, it generates episodes for your use case. That's a developer tool, not a consumer product.
What all three commercial pathways share is that they're selling something a traditional pilot can't provide. Evidence that the thing works over time. A brand considering a white label deal doesn't just want to know that you generated one good episode. They want to know that episode 200 won't be embarrassing. That the cost per episode stays flat rather than creeping up. That the system doesn't drift into weird topic clusters.
That's the through line for any presentation, whether academic, commercial, or open source. You're selling the insight that scale is epistemologically different. A traditional pilot answers, can we build it? A scaled longitudinal experiment answers, what happens when we run it long enough for the interesting failure modes to show up?
Netflix understood this before most of the industry did. Traditional TV pilots are terrible predictors. A pilot tells you whether the premise works in a single, highly polished episode. It tells you nothing about whether the show holds up over 20 episodes, whether the writer's room can sustain quality, whether audiences will stick around for season 2. Netflix moved to a model where they greenlight full seasons based on algorithmic predictions, essentially testing its scale from the jump.
The analogy holds. A 10-episode AI podcast is a TV pilot. It proves the concept, but tells you nothing about sustainability. A 1,000-episode run is a full season order. You learn whether the pipeline can maintain quality, whether listeners form habits, whether the content ages gracefully.
If you're building the pitch deck, the narrative arc is, we ran the experiment to the scale nobody else has attempted. We've got cost data that makes the unit economics obvious. We've got engagement data that proves habit formation. And we've documented the failure modes, so you don't have to discover them on your dime.
You measure success differently depending on the audience, which is the second part of the prompt's question. For personal enrichment, success is, did I learn things? Did it change my media habits in ways I value? Did it produce an archive I want to revisit? Those are subjective but real.
For a commercial audience, success is cost per episode, listener retention curves, pipeline reliability, and whether the content is good enough that someone would pay for it or sponsor it. The subjective experience of the creator is a data point, but it's not the product.
The metrics that only matter at scale are the ones a small pilot can't generate. Content decay rate. How long before an episode feels dated? Pipeline maintenance cost. How many hours per month does the human need to spend keeping it running? Audience retention over hundreds of episodes. Does the curve flatten or keep dropping?
To pull that into something usable, if someone's listening and thinking, I want to run my own scaled experiment, here's the first thing I'd steal from this playbook. Design your pipeline on day one as if you're going to run it 1,000 times.
This is the mistake almost everyone makes. You build a script that works for 10 episodes. It's got hard-coded paths. It assumes certain things will always be available. The error handling is basically print something and stop. And that's fine for a proof of concept. But if you later decide to scale, you're rebuilding from scratch.
The specific failure mode is that small-scale pipelines optimize for speed of initial results. You hard-code the voice configuration because you're only generating one voice. You don't build a retry mechanism because if one episode fails, you just run it again manually. You don't log costs because who cares about 10 API calls?
Then you hit episode 200. Suddenly the voice API has changed its endpoint. The cost has crept up 30% without you noticing, and you've got 17 failed generations in a row that you didn't catch because your error handling just printed to a terminal you stopped checking.
The counterintuitive thing is that planning for scale doesn't actually slow you down much at the start. Adding proper logging, making configuration external, building a retry queue, these are hours of work, not weeks. But they're hours you'll never get back if you skip them and have to retrofit later.
The second thing to steal is what you measure. Most AI experiments track technical metrics, generation success rate, latency, token usage. But for something that's meant to become part of someone's daily life, you need behavioral metrics too.
Daily listening rate. Not, did they listen to one episode? That's novelty. Did they listen on a Tuesday in month 8 when nothing special was happening? That's habit.
Content reuse is another one that only emerges over time. Do listeners go back to old episodes? If you're building something that's meant to be an evergreen library, the reuse pattern tells you whether you're actually building a library or just a feed.
The prompt mentions the creator's wife and friends became compulsive listeners. That's a behavioral signal that can't show up in a 10-episode test. At 10 episodes, everyone who knows you will listen once to be supportive. At 1,000 episodes, nobody's listening to be polite. They're listening because the thing is actually serving a need.
For anyone building a pitch deck, this is the slide that does the most work. Here's our cost per episode over time. It's flat, not rising. Here's our daily active listener count over 2 years. It stabilized, it didn't decay. Here's the content reuse curve. People treat the archive as a resource, not a graveyard.
The third thing is about commercialization specifically. If you're pitching this to investors or partners, lead with the cost data and the engagement curves. Don't lead with the technology. Everyone has AI. Nobody has a 1,000-episode track record.
The technology pitch is, we use agentic AI with retrieval, augmented generation, and the investors' eyes glaze over because they've heard that from 40 other startups this quarter. The data pitch is, we can produce a daily podcast for under $2 an episode, we've done it thousands of times, and here's the retention curve. That's a business, not a demo.
The engagement curve is especially powerful because it answers the question investors are actually asking, which is, will people keep using this after the novelty wears off? Most AI products have a spike and then a cliff. If you can show a curve that flattens rather than drops, you got something rare.
You don't need millions of users to show that. A handful of listeners who've been consistent for years is more informative than thousands who tried it once. Depth over breadth for this specific question.
The checklist. If you're designing your own scaled experiment, 1. Build the pipeline to handle 1,000 iterations from day 1. 2. Track behavioral metrics alongside technical ones. 3. If commercialization is on the horizon, collect cost and engagement data from the start, because that's what makes the pitch legible.
The point underneath all three is that scale isn't just more the same thing. It's a different kind of knowledge. A 10-episode pilot tells you whether the machine turns on. A 1,000-episode run tells you whether it's worth building a factory around it.
The factory question is the one that actually matters if you're thinking about doing something with this beyond personal enrichment. Most AI experiments never get past, look, it works. This one got to look, it works, it's cheap, it's sustainable, and it changed behavior. That's the difference between a demo and evidence. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The word Caspian likely derives from the Caspi people, an ancient tribe that lived near the southwestern shore of the Caspian Sea and whose name may trace back to an old Iranian root meaning white or hoary, possibly a reference to the region's salt flats visible from the water.
White salt flats? Of course! This has been my weird prompts. If you're running your own scaled experiment or thinking about starting one, we'd love to hear what you're learning. Drop us a review wherever you listen. Or find everything at myweirdprompts.com. There's a question underneath all of this that I keep coming back to. What happens when the experiment ends? Does this archive just sit there? A few thousand episodes, a frozen monument to one person's curiosity, or does it become a stepping stone to something else?
I think that's actually two different questions wrapped in one. The archive itself has permanent value regardless. It's a structured knowledge base, it's searchable, it's cross-referenced by theme. Even if no new episodes are ever generated, it remains useful. But the pipeline, the thing that built it, that's the stepping stone. The question is whether it steps toward a commercial product, an academic paper, an open source framework, or just a really interesting story.
The prompt's framing of this as a public good is interesting here. Public goods don't have to be permanent, to be valuable. A library that stops acquiring new books is still a library. But the experiment's value to others might be highest in the moment of transition, when the creator decides what to do with what they've learned.
That's where the broader implication lands for me. As agentic AI matures, I think the scaled-up proof of concept becomes the standard way to validate these systems. Not just for podcasts, for anything where the interesting questions only emerge over time. AI tutoring systems, AI moderation tools, AI-generated journalism. The pilot tells you nothing. The longitudinal run tells you everything.
This podcast is an early example of that paradigm, almost by accident. It started as a personal experiment and ended up demonstrating something about how you'd actually validate an AI system that's meant to be part of someone's daily life. The methodology might end up mattering more than the content.
which is a strange thing to say about something that's produced thousands of episodes of content. But the lesson is the durable one. If you're building something with AI that's supposed to be used over time, don't test it in a weekend and call it done. Run it until the interesting things break.
The question we'd leave listeners with is, what would you test at scale? What's the thing you've been tinkering with as a proof of concept that would teach you something new if you ran it 1,000 times instead of 10?
It doesn't have to be a podcast. It could be anything where the difference between it works once and it works over time is where all the real learning lives.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our thanks as always to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. If you're running your own scaled experiment, or if our question about what you'd test at scale sparked something, we'd like to hear about it. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or drop a review wherever you listen.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.